नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Na
ayam
sarvi
namrajyam
swarajyam
bhojyam
abhyuta
vairajyam
paramesyam
cha
anantyam
va
hare
padam.
कामयामः एतस्य श्रीमत्
राजा
श्रिया च
कुङ्कुम
गन्धद्यं
मूर्ध्ना
गौरं
गदा
वृतं नामायं सर्वे साम्राज्यम् स्वराज्यं
भोजमाभ्युता
वैराज्यं परमेश अनन्त्यं वहरे पदम् कामयामः एतस्य मूर्ध्नाबोधं कृष्ण If unsuccessful after a long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly, such a birth is rare in this world. Birth in a family of yogis or transcendentalists, those with great wisdom, is praiseworthy, because a child born in such a family receives a spiritual impetus from the very beginning of his life. So you're very, very lucky. Very nice. You can't have an international society without children. You can have an international monastery for Krishna consciousness, but you can't have an international society without children. Children are the life, just like Agassura. He decided that if he killed all the children, then all the residents of Vrindavan would die, because the children are the life. So in any society, the children are the life, they are the future. When Prabhupada was asked, how will this movement go on without you? He did not say, because we have a lot of buildings. He did not say, because my disciples will initiate. He did not say, because we're distributing our books. He said, because we have our school in Dallas. That was his answer. And also that Prabhupada was one time criticizing the Americans. He was saying the Americans are spreading their culture all over the world, very successfully, I might add. He said, but their own children are becoming hippies. It's like I was just listening to Shiva Ramaraj's podcast the other day. He was saying how now there's 250 million guns in America. And so many shootings. So why does everyone want to become like America? I don't really understand it, but anyway, there it is. He said their own children are becoming hippies. So the youth of America, not all of them, of course, are becoming spoiled. So if Americans cannot train their own children, he said, how can they try to import their culture to others? So that is cheating. So if we're trying to spread Krishna consciousness to others, first we must spread them to our own children. Does that make sense? Huh? So that is the life of the community. And the children when they're welcome in the temple, when they're engaging in such nice service, like praying in Mudanga, like an expert. Right? How old are you?
10.
10? That must be at least 20. Oh, you're the one. How old are you?
9.
You're only 9? How long have you been playing like that?
About 2 months.
Are you joking? That's awesome. Amazing. Just think what will happen after playing for 2 years. I'd be able to transform the world with this young teacher. So thank you very much. Okay. Now, you notice we didn't have room here for the translation, but the devotee who wrote the verse on the board, he knew what I was going to talk about somehow, even though I didn't tell him. So he just wrote up here, the glorious dust of Lord Krishna's feet. So somehow he picked up the theme that I was going to talk about. Although I will have a little social announcement at the end regarding the third word in this, in these verses. So after talking about the main point of the purport, we're going to look at word number 3. And so I'll just warn you that I am going to talk about something cultural at the end. Yeah, finish. Is that all right? If you don't like it, you can leave then. I figure I'll put it at the end. Not.
Not.
Vayam.
We.
Who's we?
The wives.
The wives, yeah. Sadhi.
Oh,
Sangli Lady Drobadi. Samrajam. Rulership over the entire earth. Swarajam. The position of Lord Indra, King of Heaven. Bhojam. Unlimited powers of enjoyment. Apita. Even. Vairajam. Mystic power. Paramesyam. The position of Lord Brahma, creator of the universe. Cha. And. Anantyam. Immortality. Va. Or. Hare. The Supreme Lord. Padam. The abode. I had a good guess, huh? But it was wrong. So Padam doesn't just mean feet, but it also means life. Kamayam, kamayam ahe. We desire. So the pure devotees also have a kama. They also have a desire, right? They're not desireless. Ekasya. His. Srimat. Divine. Hara. Of the feet. Rajaha. Shriya. The goddess of fortune. Shriya. From the breast, kunkuma, of the cosmetic powder, danda, by the fragrance, ajam, enriched, murjana, on our heads, botam, to carry, gadha, ritaha, of Lord Krishna, the wielder of the club. Do all of us have some desires? Okay, so this verse is going to be about what is the top desire. What is the thing that you can desire, attaining which all of your other desires will be fulfilled. Wouldn't that be nice? And you get one thing that in that one stroke fulfills all of your desires. So this is going to be explained by Rohini, speaking for, who's she speaking for?
All the
queens. All the queens, the 16,100 queens. And we heard so nicely from Chiranjeeva Prabhu yesterday the story of Krishna rescuing all those queens. Translation and purport. Oh, saintly lady. Who's that? We do not desire dominion over the earth. The sovereignty of the King of Heaven. Unlimited facility for enjoyment. Mystic power. The position of Lord Brahma, immortality, or even attainment of the kingdom of God. Then the question is, what's the question? What do you want? We simply desire. What do we want? We don't want any of those things. We simply desire to carry on our heads the glorious dust of Lord Krishna's feet, enriched by the fragrance of kumkuma from his consort's bosom. Support. The verb Raj means to rule, and from it are derived the words Samrajam, meaning rulership over the entire earth, and Swarajam, meaning rulership over heaven. Bhojam comes from the word bhuj, to enjoy, and thus refers to the capacity of enjoying whatever one desires. Doesn't that sound nice? Enjoying whatever one desires? Background music. Virat is explained by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti as representing the phrase vividam virajate, one enjoys many kinds of opulence, and specifically indicating the eight mystic perfections of anima and so on. Doesn't that sound nice? You can become visible, you can become really small. If you want something, even in a distant place, you can just reach out and get it. You can control other people's minds. People ask me, how do I make my children do this? So they want that, must want that mystic power. An alternative explanation of these terms is given by Srila Srikrishna Swami, who says that according to the Bhav Richa Brahmana, these four terms designate the power of sovereignty over each of the four cardinal directions: Samrajya for the east, Bhojya for the south, Swarajya for the west, and Vairajya for the north. Lord Krishna's queens clearly state that they do not desire any of these powers, or even the position of Lord Brahma, liberation, or entrance into the kingdom of God. They simply want the dust from
the
street, which Goddess Sri herself worships. We have Sri Mat. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti tells us that the goddess of fortune mentioned here is not Lakshmi, the consort of Narayana. After all, the Acharya explains, Goddess Lakshmi could not attain the direct association of Krishna, because this is talking about Krishna. Even after performing extended austerities, as Buddha states, Nayam Sri Yogana, Unitantaradehe Prasadaha, Bhagavatam 10:47-60. Rather, the Sri referred to here is the supreme goddess of fortune, identified by the Brihad Gota Vyatantra Devi Krishna Mayi Prota Radha Parajaya Vata. Sarva Lakshmi Mayi Sarva Kaviti Sammohini Para. The transcendental goddess Srimati Radha Rani is a direct counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna. She is the central figure for all the goddesses of fortune. She possesses all the attractiveness to attract, the all-attractive personality of Godhead. What a nice sentence. She possesses all the attractiveness to attract the all-attractive personality of Godhead. Isn't that nice? She possesses all the attractiveness to attract the all-attractive personality of Godhead. She is the primeval internal potency of the Lord. Navayam sadvisam rajam, swarajam bojamapita, vairajam paramethyam cha, ananjam vahare padam, kamaya mana etasya, srimat pada rajashriya, kuchakum kum magandajam, murjna voham gadabita. O saint lady, we do not desire dominion over the earth, the sovereignty of the King of Heaven, and unlimited facility for enjoyment, mystic power, the position of Lord Brahma, immortality, or even attainment to the kingdom of God. We simply desire to carry on our heads the glorious dust of Lord Krishna's feet, enriched by the fragrance of the kumkuma from his consort. So this theme is carried over to some extent into the next verse. So tomorrow we'll talk more about the position of Srimati Radharani and the position of Vaikuntha or Dwarka versus Vrindavana. In fact, these three verses, 41-43, are referenced in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu commentaries of Jiva Goswami Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, as evidence that the happiness of worshipping Krishna is beyond the happiness even of liberation or even of Vaikuntha. And they're specifically comparing Vaikuntha and Vrindavana, and There's a little secret about the relationship between the service of Vaikuntha and Vrindavana, which we will talk about tomorrow. Krishna will, if we're here, and the world is going on. We'll talk about that tomorrow. So today we're going to focus on what is the best thing to desire. You know that picture, the painting in the, at least it's in the old editions of Bhagavad Gita, of the banyan tree from the 15th chapter?
Yes.
Some people here just desire to sleep like Muchakunda. Because they've been doing so much service for Krishna. You know, Muchakunda went with the demigod. Look, Muchakunda went with the demigod and he was fighting against the demons. And after doing that for thousands of years, he was really tired. So if you've done a lot of service and you're really tired, would you please go to your rooms and go to bed? Okay. And if you want, if you're not that tired, then would you stand up or sit against the wall or something like that? Thank you very much. Now you're allowed to go to your room and go to bed, and maybe you will even get the benediction that anyone who tries to wake you untimely will be burnt to ashes. Who knows? You'll wake up and maybe Krishna will be in your room waking you up. You never know, you know. Okay. So everyone is desiring something. No one can be without desire. Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am." He was trying to find what is the basis of everything. What is the one thing that we know for sure? And he said, the only thing I know for sure is that I exist. And I exist because I think. But thinking is not the basis of existence. Are there amoebas that probably don't think very much? Probably don't do much thinking. What is the basis of existence? Consciousness, which is exhibited by what? What's the main symptom of consciousness?
So.
Consciousness is the symptom of soul. What is the symptom of consciousness? How do we know that somebody is conscious? They do what? They feel. They desire. They do. Well, thinking may not happen very much. Like, as I say, the lower life forms probably don't do much thinking. Probably a little bit, but not much. But they do have desire. Desire is the most essential aspect of a living being. She's saying, Kama Yamaha. Kama, we have some desire, and kama can also mean lust. It's a very intense desire. Not just, oh yeah, you know. Like when I came into Australia, I was thinking, it'd be nice to see a kangaroo. I said that to one devotee. They said, we can take you to the zoo. I said, no, I've seen kangaroos in the zoos before. I want to see one in, you know, hopping around. And when I was in New Govardhan, I got to see a wallaby. You know, I was walking in the temple 8 o'clock in the morning, there was a wallaby on the side of the road hopping away. I said, thank you, Krishna. I got to see my wallaby in Australia. Now, but that's not a kama. Okay, that's not some intense. It was like, oh, it'd be nice to see kangaroo. It's not like, oh, I gotta see a kangaroo. You know, not like that. But what he's talking about is kama, is a very intense desire. As Krishna explains in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, by contemplation one becomes attached and one gets this kama, this intense desire. So instead of intense desires that are the nature, how are you? That are the nature of the soul and are the evidence of the existence of the soul. So we are often desiring things that are not leading to our full satisfaction. Right, so there's a little exercise I do. I learned this from Jamal Krishnamaraj. And it very nicely illustrates what should be the basis of our desires. Okay, we all need to do a little exercise, a little mental exercise. Okay, everybody ready? All right. I'd like us all to think about everything we've ever desired. Okay? Mine feels like a whole football stadium. Okay? All the material, not the spiritual side, all the material desires that you've ever had. Right? Think of them like a long wish list. You know, like a Christmas list, a long shopping list. You're bringing them to the shop with the material energy. Now, I want you to think of what percentage of those desires you just didn't get filled at all, and fulfilled at all in any form whatsoever. It's like you went to the shop and they just didn't have the item in stock, so you didn't get it in any form. So what percentage of all the material desires that you have did you just not get fulfilled at all? Anybody? Somebody?
99%.
Man, you've got some bad karma. Not fulfilled in any form. Just didn't get them at all. Somebody else? Sorry about that, eh? I'm learning. Somebody else, what percentage of the desires that you had you just didn't get fulfilled? Somebody else. 30%, okay? Somebody else.
50.
So half. You understand percentages mean? Somebody else? No? Okay. So now let's put aside all those, whether it's 99 or 30%. All those. Now we're left, we're at the shop. We got our material desires in the shop of material energy. And the ones that they do have in stock. Okay? We have a desire and we have the karma coins to buy it. We get that thing that we desire. We're all happy we get the thing we desire and we bring it home and we open it up and try to use it and it doesn't work the way we want it. It doesn't have all the features we thought it had. Somehow it disappoints us. Right? We were talking earlier with Lakshmana marrying Krishna, how every woman wants to marry the knight in shining armor. We were talking about how Krishna put on his armor. Right? So the woman's thinking, I'm getting a knight in shining armor, and she finds out she's getting, you know, a couch potato who leaves his socks under the bed. So now what percentage of the things that we desired them, we got them, but they were disappointments. They were disappointments. So what percentage of the things that we wanted and got were disappointments? Somebody? 100%. Never was satisfied with anything you got. Okay. Somebody, you're out of the game now. Okay. Somebody else, what percentage of the things that you desired and you want were disappointments? Somebody? 70. Okay. 20? 80%? 60? Okay. So now we're left with the things we wanted. We got them, except for you, and they're perfect. Exactly what we wanted. So I had a Toyota van like this. I love that van. It was great. It had a lot of room, but you could park, a lot of room inside, but it was small. You could park it in a regular space. It had plenty of room for the whole family and a few more. We almost always had a few more. And all of our suitcases and trunks in the back. It maneuvered really easily. The seats could go down completely flat and form a total bed so we could use it to camp out, you know, if we were traveling to festivals. It had screens in the windows. You could put the screens and sleep in there. It was just fantastic. Got great petrol mileage. Never needed repairs. I actually love that van. One day, my daughter and I were driving the van. And this young man was late to work. And didn't stop at a stop sign. It's a true story, folks. He didn't stop at a stop sign. And he smashed into my Toyota's hand. Okay. How many of the things that you wanted, you got them, and they were perfect, how many of those did you get to keep? How many of those things did we get to keep? How many?
None.
Nothing. How many?
None.
Nothing. Zero, right?
Zero.
Zero. 0%. It's pretty bad, isn't it? There's not one single thing in this world that we want, we get, is perfect, and we keep it. Not one. One of the devotees you asked me the other night, I said, the materialist said, you're saying the materialist, everything is temporary, but your happiness is also temporary. So what's the difference? I think that's for the beginner in Krishna consciousness. Spiritual happiness comes and goes. Anistha, sadhana bhakti, anistha bhajan kriya. Sometimes you're feeling spiritual happiness and sometimes you're not. It's before we're free of most of our anarchy. But at least we have hope. Materially, is there any hope? Is there any hope? What's the percentage of hope, folks? What is it?
Zero.
It's pretty bad. Pretty bad. What kind of investment is that? Just imagine your financial advisor says, you know, if you put all of your money in this account, you will earn zero interest and you will receive 0% of the principal. All of your principal will be lost and you'll get no interest. Would you put your money in that account? But that's exactly what we're doing, isn't it? We have so much thinking power, we have so much energy, we have so much power of this desire. It's called Ichcha Shakti. We have a Shakti of desire. And we have so little power to get our desire fulfilled according to our degree of austerity. Prabhupada says everyone has some extraordinary talent that they learn through austerity. All these things she's talking about, dominion over the earth, sovereignty of the heavenly planets, unlimited facility for enjoyment. What conditioned soul wouldn't want these things? Unlimited mystic power. Now, to get these things, one has to work very hard. Now, all of us here have done some pious activity. We've worked hard, we've accumulated some good karma coins. We all have some good karma in our bank account that we've achieved through great austerity, through penance, through pious activity, through charity. Where are we going to invest our money? Where are we going to invest our energy? We all have some energy, right? And you know what? We're investing that energy at every moment. We're making a decision at every moment. Where am I going to invest my energy? What am I going to put as my goal? Because you know what? We do achieve the goals that we set, don't we? In that picture of Shoyoga saying in the Bhagavad Gita, the banyan tree, what does it show? That tree is all on the water of what?
Desire.
Desire. So Krishna explains that he smells the desire in our heart, just like someone can smell the aroma of a flower by being near it. And then what does he do? Nityo nityanam, chaitanya chaitanam, eko bhamanam yo vidadati kama. Again, we have this word kama. Krishna's fulfilling all of our desires. Okay, he's not fulfilling all my desires. I just went through a little exercise and 99% of them weren't even fulfilled. What he does when we have a desire is he gives us the intelligence from within as to what to do to earn the right to get that desire. Engage in this activity and this activity, and if we follow his instructions, we'll gain the karmic credit to get that desire. Does that always happen in one life? No. So if we're desiring these things, we may not achieve them in this life. But we can use that karmic credit to achieve them. But then what will we have at the end? What do we have? What are we left with? Zero. We're left with zero. We don't get to keep any of it. First of all, we desire a bunch of things that we don't even like once we get them. Think, why did I want that? And then the ones that we think, yeah, that was a good thing, we don't even get to keep it. And even the perfect things, do they give us full satisfaction? Do you think my Toyota van gave me unlimited bliss? Even the perfect things aren't perfect, are they? No. What are we spending our energy on? This is a minute-by-minute choice. We have free will. We have free will. We can decide. No one else can do that for you. It's not that if we're giving all of our desires to the temporary, unsatisfying things of the world, that somehow Guru and Krishna are just going to pop us back to the spiritual world anyway. Frankly, if they did, we would just leave again. We'd say, no, I want something else. Right, as we did on the Marshall trip many, many years ago. He said if you took a materialistic person and put them back to God, they'd say, oh, that's a hard mission. In fact, if we have intense desire, then the spiritual world is manifested here. What makes this the material world? From Krishna's point of view, spirit and matter are the same. What makes this the material world? Our consciousness. Why do we have that consciousness? Because we want it. You can't engage in material activities without materialistic consciousness. It's impossible because you see Krishna everywhere. You can only engage in these things, rulership over the earth, mystic power. You can only be working for them if your consciousness is covered by an illusion. As soon as the illusion was gone, you'd see it's a bunch of zeros. And who would play a computer game if all they saw were ones and zeros on the screen? You wouldn't. If we looked at the world and saw it's just a bunch of protons, neutrons, and electrons, we wouldn't try to enjoy it. Or if we saw that it's Krishna everywhere, we wouldn't try to exploit him. So because we have these desires, therefore we're covered. It's not that because I'm covered, therefore I have these desires. It's not Krishna's your fault. You're the one who's covering me. And if you took off the covering, then naturally I would desire you. He says, no, you're asking me for the covering. You're saying, please put me into illusion so I can fulfill these desires. And guess what? As soon as we don't have those desires anymore, guess what would be gone? The illusion, which is the source of all of our suffering. Dukkha, Krishna says. It's the source of suffering. Of course it's going to be the source of suffering. I'm working for things that I don't get. Does that cause us suffering? Yeah. I work for something I get and I think, what a stupid desire I had. Does that cause suffering? Or the worst suffering is you get something you really like and you know it's temporary. That's the worst. The more perfect your enjoyment is here, the more you suffer. Do you have some toys you really like? Yeah, you like a fire truck or something, you really like it? So then you're even more afraid you're going to lose it. If you have a toy you don't like, what does it matter if it breaks, right? You don't care. Oh, I didn't like it anyway. But if you really like it, then you're constantly in a state of fear. Fear. Let's say someone brought you a plate of prasad and it was your favorite crap. Okay? Krishna would do that, by the way, in the spiritual world. He sends his soda into the kitchen for something else, and while she's gone, off his plate, he takes all of the favorite preps of all his devotees and he gives each of them what they most desire. But let's say for breakfast now, let's say Krishna was serving out breakfast. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he does that too. You know, he walks around to all the devotees and gives them each their favorite preps. So maybe Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's serving out breakfast, so you're each going to get your favorite prep, okay? Just imagine that plate in front of you. Everything you really like. Okay, but Chandra Yuka was talking about yesterday the devotees in the Soviet Union. So just imagine now, we're a devotee in the Soviet Union when the devotees were always in danger of being put in jail or something, right? So you've just got your plate of your favorite crap. But you kind of see out of the corner of your eye that there's a KGB officer standing behind you. Right? He says, I have a warrant for your arrest. You're like, do I get to finish my gluttony? Because I don't know, as soon as I get the phone call, I got to arrest you. Because I'm just waiting for the phone call on my mobile. So you don't know. Do I get to take one bite, two bites? Do I get to finish it? When is it going to go? So we're living in that constant state of fear. So the more that we want something, the stronger the fear is. Prabhupada says, like sweet rice mixed with sand. We don't know. Could any of us die at any moment? Even sitting in this room, we have a heart attack, stroke, no? Does it happen? Is it going to happen to us? Possibly. For sure, death is going to happen to this body. 100%. We just don't know when and how. The KGB officer is standing behind us at every moment. So, now what kind of enjoyment is that? What kind of enjoyment is that? So the best thing that you get in this world, the other mystic powers, unlimited facility for achieving all your desires, rulership of heaven, but the KGB officer can take it away at any time. And you're left with nothing. Like maybe you were in your last life. Now where is it? Right? Nobody looks at you now. Even your parents don't listen to you. Last life, the whole universe was listening to you. I got this email from this devotee saying, you know, my daughter is so stubborn. She doesn't do what we say. I said, it's very good you have a determined daughter. When she grows up, she won't listen to people telling her to be a liar. But I said, maybe in her last life, you know, she was Chandra or Indra or something. So now it's a little hard for her to be a three-year-old with other people telling her what to do. But it's gone, right? I mean, how many might have had billions of dollars in her last life? It's gone. So then what should we desire? Because we come back to the point that the essential feature of a living entity is desire. So the Buddhists, the Maya Gaudis say, they look at this problem and they say, okay, well, I just will stop desiring anything. I'll just be satisfied without anything. But that's the nature of the soul, to desire. So it's really funny here. What are they desiring? They're desiring dust, pit dust. Doesn't that seem like a funny desire? You know, Krishna Maharaj's desire? He desired millions of ears. I don't want anything in the world. What do you want? Millions of years. I don't want anything in the world. What do you want? Quit this. So to a materialistic person, this seems really strange. Materialistic people think that we devotees are pretty strange, don't they? They think we're really, really strange. What do you want? What kind of happiness do you have? Why does she want this foot touch? Of course, she wants Krishna's foot touch generally. Do we want the dirt that's on the bottom of people's feet? You have your feet. So usually, we're not very interested in the dirt that's at the bottom of feet. We tell them to say, wipe your feet. We don't say, would you please come in and scatter the dirt that's on the bottom of your feet? Oh, what to speak of putting in our hair? No? Usually not. I don't see very many devotees, although probably we should do this, I don't see very many devotees running out to the shoe room and rubbing their hair. Oh, that's probably a good idea. That's a bad idea, actually. Don't call right out here right now. After the class, we have this competition. Everybody's going to put the foot dust of the devotees on their head. Krishna likes to put the foot dust of the devotees on his head. But why does she want that? Why does she want the foot dust mixed with Radharani's kumkum powder? Why does she want that? Well, first of all, that's not temporary. First of all, Krishna's eternal. So that never goes away. Second of all, it's supreme happiness. Gopa Kumara, he goes from one planet to the other in the material and spiritual world. You know, he goes and he'll say, oh, 1,000 times more happiness. Then he goes to the next place. Oh, 1,000 times more happiness. Next place. 1,000 times more happiness. Next place. And then as he gets to the Loka Vrindavan, he said, I can't even describe this happiness. He said, it's completely beyond the reach of the mind or words. And Krishna explains it as boundless, transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. So Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. When one gets in touch with him, one also experiences unlimited pleasure. Actually, whatever little material pleasure that we get in this world, that's a little indication of you think of anything that you've found enjoyable physically, mentally, intellectually, emotionally in this world, the essence of that, the taste of that, is Krishna.
Like, what do you like? What kind of things do you like? What do you really like?
Book distribution.
I was asking a material question. Just see.
You step into the leaf on the Vedanta.
Are you studying? Really? Wow, are you planning on being like running the whole Iskcon Society? Take it. Who's your parents? Take a carriage for treat them very carefully. Raise them very carefully. So we may like something, we like some good food, or we like some entertainment, or we want some new clothes, or if we're really transcendental, we like quite much. But this rub that we're getting from even material things, what to speak of, from spiritual things, that's Krishna. That's Krishna. We've all tasted a little bit of Krishna, haven't we? Just think of our experience in the Hare Krishna movement. You have some prasadam and the taste is not ordinary. We've had this experience. We give rice to people and they're like, how did you make this rice? You know, or they'll try this coffee recipe. My sister-in-law would email me. She said, oh, it doesn't matter how many times I make it. It just doesn't turn out the way you made it. What are we tasting? What are we tasting? Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it's Krishna's saliva. We're tasting Krishna. Or we're chanting in the kirtan. I saw so many devotees who were so much relishing the kirtan. So we've heard ordinary music. All of us have heard ordinary music. And sometimes the kirtans, musically speaking, they're not even as expert as ordinary music. But what is that pleasure we're getting? What is that? Can you explain it just by the music? It's Krishna. Right? We're chanting japa. Sometimes when we're chanting japa, time and space are gone, and we're feeling such happiness. What is that? And then, you know, if you're just touching a piece of wood and just saying some words, you know. Can't be explained. My point is, it can't be explained materially. You see the beauty of the deity. It's not like you see beauty in the paintings. It's not just like you may get some happiness from seeing an art exhibit. But we experience such much greater happiness, don't we? Don't we experience some happiness that we can't explain materially? Oh, you're happy because there's so many flowers. No, there's something beyond that. I can go to a flower show, you know, and there's some happiness. So what is that we're tasting? When we're seeing the deity, when we're distributing group, when we're eating prasadam. So then you're cleaning the toilets at the temple, and you're overwhelmed with this incredible happiness. Obviously, it's not coming from toilet cleaning. Right? What are they experiencing? They're experiencing Krishna. And it may only be a shadow. It may only be a little tiny bit of a shadow. Just imagine how much ecstasy there is in Krishna. And it's ever expanding. Even Krishna's always expanding his happiness. He looks at Radharani and he feels happy. And his happiness increases and his beauty increases. And she looks at him, and when she sees his happiness and beauty increases, her happiness and beauty increases. And he sees her happiness and beauty increases, and his happiness and beauty increases. And so on and so on. And his happiness is always, and it's full of variety. It's not just like this, yes, I'm happy. Right? Sometimes the happiness manifests as anxiety. Oh, Krishna can call me, what's going to happen to him? Sometimes the happiness manifests as crying. Manifests all different varieties of happiness. So it's eternal, it doesn't stop, it's boundless. The nature of the happiness is boundless, it doesn't stop in time. And it's fully satisfying. Lord Kapila Dev says that Krishna takes whatever form the devotee desires. He actually gives himself to the devotees. And Krishna says that once you gain this, you think, there's nothing better than this. Sometimes people might think that materially for a moment. You know, they get their fancy house, their fancy car, they have their MBA, they have their beautiful wife, and their kids are getting scholarships, and they think, nothing better than this. But how long does that last? You know, the plumbing in the house doesn't work, and people are envious of you because you have your MBA, and your kids don't turn out that good, and your wife yells at you because you didn't fix the car. And, you know, and then you think, I thought there was nothing better than this. But this is nothing better than this. So the whole purpose of our Krishna consciousness movement, what is the purpose of our Krishna consciousness movement? It is to purify our desire. That's it. That's what Krishna says in the 12th chapter. That the whole purpose of performing sadhana bhakti or vyasa yoga is to develop ichcha or kama. So everything we're doing, at every moment we're desiring something. We are never desireless. We are always desiring something at every moment. So while we are chanting our japa, what is our desire? That's what Krishna's hearing. That's what Krishna's hearing. Just like if you go on the road from Vrindavan to Radhakunda to Govardhan, when the Vrindavan road hits the Radhakunda road, there's a family there, they live under a cart. They have sheep and goats. And the little girl will come up to you and she'll say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. What's your ichcha? What's your kama? Money. What's Krishna hearing? What's Krishna hearing? Give me money. What's she going to get? Money. Maybe not this one. Right? Even I can tell that's her desire, can't I? I can understand that without this, that she's not saying, Krishna, please engage me in your service. I am going to get to where you came from. That's not what she's saying. The mouth is saying something, but what is the voice of desire saying? You walk down the streets and Lloyd Bazaar, Hare Krishna! Hare Bol! Hare Krishna! They have a photo of Prabhupada in their shop. What is their voice of ichcha? So we should first of all become aware. This is called the Pasyanti Bhag in the 11th canto of Dushkara, the voice of the Ichcha Shakti. What is our karma? What is our karma? We have to desire anyway. Desire cannot be stopped. And as Balimaharaj told Vamadeva, he said, you should ask for something. Having attained which, you will never have to ask anything from anybody again. So that is the best of Krishna's mother speak. Now I also promised you a little cultural, and as I said, you can leave now if you don't want to hear this. So this is going to be a little political cultural thing. So here, how is Rohini speaking to Draupadi? What does she call her? She calls her Sadvi. What did she call her before? What other names did she call her? Anybody remember? From text 31, what did she call her? We talked a little bit about the story. Yajna-Sayini. Remember we were talking about that? Yajna-Sayini, how she came out of the fire. She also called her Rajini, queen. Okay. So there's, and we were talking earlier, this relates earlier to the fact that that's okay, he's fine. He's not. That Krishna's queens were calling Krishna Krishna. Remember we talked about that?
Yes.
How Krishna's queens were calling Krishna Krishna? So there are certain etiquette for addressing. So we find here that here's a woman talking to another woman, and what does she call her?
Sadhvi.
So somehow or other in our Krishna consciousness movement, we've developed a strange habit of the way women talk to other women. And I thought, since Krishna handed me this, I never bring in things unless Krishna hands them to me in the verse and purport. That's one of my vows. You know, if Krishna's in the verse and purport, I'll talk about it. If it's not, I won't. So, but Krishna handed me this, so you have to blame me. So Prabhupada says here, this is in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 334, and he also says it in various places. Okay. For example, sex enjoyment is a necessity for the conditioned soul, and sex enjoyment is allowed under the license of marriage ties. According to scriptural injunctions, one is forbidden to engage in sex relationships with any woman other than one's wife. All other women are to be considered as one's mother. That injunction is for whom? Men or women?
Men.
So when Prabhupada says that a man should see and address all women except his wife, please don't call your wife mother because you don't marry your mother. So when he says that all men should address all women except wife as mother, what is the reason for that? Krishna says that sacrifices should be performed in knowledge. And he tells us another verse. What we're doing, we should know why we're doing it. Because blind following is condemned. Blind following is condemned. We should know why we're doing it. We get some benefit out of doing things in ignorance because we're doing something transcendental. But the problem is, if you do things in ignorance, you may do the wrong thing. You may be doing the wrong thing because you don't know why you're doing it. So why is it said that men should call women except their wife and mother? What's the reason the problem is here? Why?
Respect.
What kind of respect? And specifically in what context?
You don't have lustful thoughts about
them. Who has a lustful thought about their mother? One person in 10 billion has a lustful thought about their own mother. Nobody lusts after their mother. Of course, one devotee said to Prabhupada, well, Freud said that, and he said, well, maybe he lusts after his mother. In India, we don't lust after our mothers. So that's the most pure relationship between the mother and son. It's the most pure relationship. So when a man calls a woman mother, first of all, that means he's seeing her as a woman. He sees her as a soul, as another, and then we have another form of address. But he sees her as a woman, and he's saying, my dear mother, I don't see you as a sex object. I don't see you as an object for enjoyment. Because generally, when man sees a woman, Chaitanya Prabhu said, I become agitated even by seeing the wooden form of a woman. So especially for men, it's very visual. So they see a woman, immediately they're thinking, am I right? Women are a little different the way they're wired. But the men, they see women, and immediately they're thinking, how can I enjoy it? It's almost automatic. At least that's what I've been told. Because essentially, women are wired a little differently. Women's lust is a little different than men. So that's the wiring of a man. Oh, that's a sensory object for me. So this is the key, materially speaking, is that if you feel and you address the woman as mother, but there's no scope for women addressing other women as mother, unless they're actually a mother. Or unless you're the kind of woman who, you know, like that. So, there are women like that. If you're a woman like that, then maybe you can address other women as well. But otherwise, it makes no sense. So, I don't know why all of a sudden I just finally just got, my load of straws on my back finally broke. You know, after just hearing women call me Mataji over and over again, I finally, I don't know what happened. I don't know why it happened here, but somehow I just reached my limit on this. And let's please do something because we understand it. And there's many terms in the Shastra. There's also many other ways that I can address women. My mother isn't the only way. Like Prabhupada talks about how there was one elderly man whose wife died, but he had no children. And his sister said, you have to marry again because who else will take care of you? And he's talking about how he married a young woman. And he said that we all call that woman Didi, older sister. He said the relationship was very tight. That's not the only way. In the Shastra we also find this other way than that, address women. But certainly, whatever we're doing in Krishna consciousness, or whatever it may be, whether we're touching the plane to our head, whether we're offering flowers to the deity, how we speak to each other, if we call each other Prabhu, it should be, hey Prabhu! No, Prabhu means master. So whatever we're doing, we should do all of it. This was from the third chapter. So in the third, or fourth, and fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about doing things as a sacrifice. And he says, one should do everything as a sacrifice with transcendental knowledge. So everything we do should be with knowledge. Again, if we do things ignorantly, we'll get some benefit. But then there's always a chance that we'll twist things. And that we'll apply them wrongly. Right? It'll become just ritualistic. And then, frankly, we can become like, happens with every other religious system. It starts out as a spiritual system, and gradually it becomes ritualistic, and people don't even know why they're doing anything anymore. And half the time, then, they do things that aren't even in their scriptures, because they don't even understand what they're doing. So this is just one little symptom of this. A habit that's come into the movement without understanding. So everything should be with understanding, and most of all, everything should be with a proper desire, with the desire to advance in Krishna consciousness. So we started very late, so now it is late, and I don't know if we have any time for questions at all, because it's already time for prasadam. We'll take one question, and that will be it. Yes. Yes.
What is the importance of kumkum?
We'll talk about that tomorrow. Because really, although that's mentioned here in this verse, it is more clearly discussed tomorrow about the purpose of kumkum, the fact that we're talking about Srimati Radharani, and the acharyas who comment on these verses. Some of them just comment on 41 and 42, but many of them comment on 41, 42, and 43 together. And as I say, it's also very much commented on in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. These verses are brought in as evidence. So we'll be looking at that. I wanted to focus today mostly on the na 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 na. I don't want this, I don't want that, I don't want this, I don't want this, I don't want this. What is my karma? What is my desire? And a little hint as to why that is the best thing to desire. And then we'll go deeper into that, Krishna willing. We'll go deeper into that tomorrow. What is really special about the dust from Krishna's lotus feet? And why is it that Krishna's queens in Dwarka, why are they desiring this dust from Krishna's feet that's mixed with the kumkum of Radharani? So why are they desiring that? So that we'll look at more tomorrow. So does someone have anything that's just burning a hole in their brain that they have to write? Might be somebody. Okay. Thank you very much. I hope I didn't offend anything. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.
No born Vaishnava's key. Srila Prabhupada's key.